Okay, thank you very much. So, welcome back, everyone. Let's start again with another act of kindness to ourselves, another settling meditation. I hope you're okay with this, yeah, as it's doing more meditations. And this way, this time, yeah, again, it'll be becoming more familiar with our place of safety, our place of refuge, internal. So again, adopt a posture that is supportive. And actually lying down is also fine, so long as you're not so tired you'd fall asleep, but lying down, but keeping your back straight. And you know the lion posture in yoga, that's often recommended for meditation. Okay, so the aim, as we say, is for the mind to be stable, as stable and as still as possible, and as alert as possible, and as relaxed as possible. And let's add to that, as kind as possible. And we gradually narrow our focus of attention, awareness down from our bodily sensations, our awareness of the posture, over the body overall, and then sensations in the various parts of the body, particularly those where we know we personally tend to hold tension. And gently on the out-breath, release any tension that may be there. And when we're ready in our own time, we narrow the focus of awareness down to the breath itself. Being interested in each and every breath, in and out. And again, suggestions if the mind is all over the place. Just mild activity, that's fine. It'll settle down. But if it's all over the place, people sometimes suggest counting the in and the out breath as one. In and out, two. In and out, three, and so on up till 10. Begin again, do that one or two more times until you feel more settled. Letting go of any expectations, preconceived ideas. Just trying your best with each breath to stay with it. and trying to maintain a sense of balance, a sense of humour, if you lose it. Just gently, kindly come back again, begin again. So little thoughts may come and go like clouds in the sky. But sometimes some thoughts, worries, anxieties may kind of tug at us more persistently. Sometimes it can be helpful in those circumstances just to notice, to note, thinking, make a mental note and go back to the breath. That may be enough just to acknowledge that thinking has been happening. Draw a line under it and go back to the breath. And just occasionally there are those worries or times in our life when even that doesn't work, in which case we can maybe make a note to think about this later, or do something physical, but as mindfully as possible, go for a walk, do some yoga or Tai Chi, something like that. Mostly meditation is a place of refuge, safety, and with habituation it becomes stronger, but that doesn't mean it's always going to work. And again, acceptance of that fact can be helpful. Then when you're ready, gently end the meditation. Okay. Everyone's moved around. Odd. Like party time. Okay, so just a quick recap. I gave that definition of compassion at the beginning, that it is a sense of concern that arises when we are confronted with another suffering than our own, and feel motivated to see that suffering relieved. So it says those three aspects we've talked about, that actually being open enough to recognize suffering, whether our own or others, whatever degree, that we care about it, that it matters to us. If it doesn't, we just, like in that first poem, we just go back to ploughing our field or go on to doing what we're doing. So we care. And then the aspect that moves it from empathy into to compassion, apart, according to Matthieu Ricard, is that that wish to help, or that sort of that context in which we can understand it and make sense of it and have sort of a bigger picture, really, in which to put that empathy, that concern. And the bigger picture includes knowing our own capabilities, knowing what's possible and what's not possible, and doing what we can when we can. And actually, people say, he said, you know, but also others say that when they're able to move from that, and we see it quite a lot, really, in, I notice that you see things on the news of people who have maybe suffered a tragedy in their lives of some kind. You know, maybe somebody in their life has died from illness or violence or something like that. And they go on to do set up a charity or something like that, or do some work to help others who are in that position. To actually doing something can be a very effective coping strategy of moving on, you know, if that's what we're ready to do at that time, if that's what we want to do. And actually, you know, move beyond that feeling of being overwhelmed by suffering, being overwhelmed by it. So we've also discussed suffering as well in the last section. Recognize that it's part of life, that it's not permanent, it's not unchanging, that we do have some control, and that there may even be some benefits from acknowledging the suffering in our life, so long as it, what doesn't kill us, you know, makes us stronger. So long as it doesn't kill us, of course, or destroy us in some way, can actually be beneficial. And the presumption of this course is that we can consciously cultivate our compassion. We can grow it. We can make it stronger, more longer lasting, more widespread. But there are obstacles to that. And part of that we've discussed, but you know, part of them is the fear, is facing the fear of suffering, and recognizing that. But there may be other fears as well. So again, I've taken another extract from Jinpa's book, which, if we can put on the screen share, please, Faye, it actually looks at some of these fears directly. We've spoken a bit about some of them actually so far, but let's have a look and see if there's any that connect. There was one that, when I was looking at them, found quite helpful. So they've, again, in their studies, they've distinguished three types of fear of compassion. There are probably many, but you know, it can be helpful just to kind of start unpicking this again. So fear of compassion for others, fear of compassion from others, and fear of compassion for oneself. So let's look at the first to start with. So this is all just for our own benefit, our own interest. How strongly do we identify with the following statements? There may be one or other that really kind of resonates for you. So for others to start with. So people will take advantage of me if I'm too compassionate and forgiving. Another one. If I'm too compassionate, others will become dependent on me. Another one, I can't tolerate others' distress. It's too distressing for me. Another one, people should help themselves rather than wait for others to help them. That's a worldview, a view that people may have. And again, this is something we may resonate with to a certain degree. There are some people in life who don't deserve compassion. So those are things that can get in the way of developing compassion. Those are ideas or thoughts or feelings that we may have to some degree or other. How about receiving compassion from others? So how do we go with these? Thank you. I am afraid that if I need other people to be kind, they will not be so. So I can't depend on compassion. Again, these notes are all up on the resources, so you don't need to write anything down. I worry that people are only kind and compassionate when they want something from me. So I don't trust their compassionate feelings, their kindness. I think it's a way of getting something, a bargaining chip. If I think someone is being kind and caring towards me, I put up a barrier. Can't cope. And then fears of compassion for oneself. And we'll go into this much more deeply tomorrow. More deeply. I fear that if I develop compassion for myself, I will become someone I don't want to be. I fear that if I am more self-compassionate, I will become weak. Or I feel that if I start to feel compassion for myself, I will be overcome with sadness and grief. So those are all statements, I'm sure, that have been distilled from the workshops that Jinpa and his colleagues have done on this developing compassion. So they're all, you know, sort of ideas that people have. Actually, sorry, Faye, could we maybe leave them up for a little bit longer just so people get time to go through them again? Thank you very much. So again, just read them through quietly to yourself. Let's leave them up there for a couple of minutes. It's good actually if you just take it up a little bit more, they do all fit, that's it, all on one page. Thank you. Thank you. And just as you sort of say each phrase or each question or phrase to yourself, just check what happens, what comes up for you. I'm not going to ask you to tell us. Okay, so maybe just for your own benefit, if there's anything there, if there's one there that resonates or two that resonate for you, maybe see if anything comes up, anything that you can do to help. Kind of rely perhaps on inner wisdom showing itself, revealing itself, rather than necessarily making a plan. And maybe nothing reveals itself, who knows? Okay, thanks. So thanks, Faye. We can let those down now. So again, that was for your own interest, but if that triggered any thoughts or feelings with anybody that they would like to share, that could be the basis for a discussion. I don't have too much to say on this, but for once, but by all means, share. Anne.
One thing that came up to me about fear of taking compassion for other people, I don't think it comes from... Sorry?
Taking it, accepting it from other people.
Yes. I just scribbled down, I put up barriers, I think I do. Because people... No. I'm afraid they won't really get it. So I start talking about whatever difficulties, and I don't expect to be understood, generally. I mean, there are people in my life that do. But generally, I don't open up because I don't expect to be understood. It's just something from way, way back. Mm. And therefore, I just pretend everything's all right. It's fine. It's fine. And there aren't many people I would be honest with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
No, thank you. Thank you. It is to accept compassion is to admit to vulnerability, isn't it? To oneself and others, and to be vulnerable, not just to admit to vulnerability, to put oneself in the vulnerable position of being heard, being understood, of receiving compassion. And yeah, putting up barriers, I can certainly recognize that one for sure as well. Avril.
I think I'm the opposite, actually. I have trouble with boundaries. I kind of wear my heart in my sleeve a bit. And then I kind of open myself up to vulnerability in as much as I become disempowered, really, instead of taking charge of what's bothering me. Okay, yes, it's good to talk about it, but I think it's disempowering to people giving you well-meaning advice, but then they're expecting a result because they've given you this. It comes with conditions, I think.
Yeah.
I'm that with family anyway, but mum or, whatever. So you try to please others and then you end up, it's just a disaster, really. And you become this chameleon trying to, I please everyone or, adapt to their thinking. And it doesn't work. But so boundaries for me, so I can't... Where did that come in the for others
mm-hmm.
and to for oneself? I can't remember, but yeah.
So if you just heard your close friend saying that, what advice would you give them?
I wouldn't impose advice. I'd just maybe say, well, what do you think? Why do you think that happened? And then they can, I think it's more effective, and they'll come to maybe a more of an understanding instead of looking outside, unless it's someone that's very wise and has the skills, but there's few about, but great leaders and people like yourselves, facilitators who are trained, but we're always, practicing and tested. Yeah. So, I'm definitely, as I get, and I'm getting old also, I'm running out of time here, so I've got to start watching my thoughts, my speech, my actions, the effect it has on others, and how others affect me, and just having that awareness, but being kind about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Mm. Okay, well, thank you. Thanks very much, Avril.
You're welcome.
Sorry to interrupt you. I think we've got a late comer in the waiting room just now, but I'm not actually quite sure who they are. But I'll just let them in if you're okay with that.
Okay, is everyone okay with that? Any... It's exciting, isn't it?
The Dalai Lama pops up.
Oh, now that would be nice. That would be very, very nice. Hello, Mackie, are you with us?
Yeah. I am here. Sorry, I'm very late.
Yeah, you are that. But you're here now, that's okay. Yes. That's good. Thank you. Okay, so we've just been talking about, we've been examining compassion in general and talking about the things that may well hold us back, may obstruct our compassion developing. I don't know if the discussion has, if anybody wanted to add anything to that. Yes, Leslie.
I just wanted to share something around making sense of one of the statements, which was some people don't deserve compassion or something along those lines. And I was thinking about, without going into too much detail, somebody who had injured my daughter, and she said, "You don't have any compassion for him." And I said, I do have compassion for him. However, it comes with some discrimination. It comes with boundaries, and that is, he can't come back. He can't be in our circle. It's too dangerous. And her, she's only young, and well, she's 20 now, but you know, she's still young. That's in my. It's young, isn't it? And she was saying, "I want to help him," and I said, "You can't help him." And I was thinking, you know, where do I stand on this? Well, I was very clear actually where I stood on it, but I didn't want to down what she was trying to say to me, which was, I want to be kind to him. He's got these issues, but on the other hand, I was like, well, actually, yes, he does, but frankly, he's no good for you, love. And it's worse than that, because we're going to be going to certain places to keep you safe. And to those places we went, and it was dealt with. But her view was, that was not very kind. That was not very compassionate. But it had, from my point of view, it had to be her kindness which came first. And it's, I had no doubt in my mind, really, except for a little niggle in my head, which was, yeah, it's a real shame what happened to him, but that's the way he needed to go for her to keep safe.
Yeah.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
It is. It is difficult, and it's, and thank you for sharing that, Leslie. It's like we were talking about before, isn't it? I mean, there are people who would say, absolutely no way, they don't even deserve compassion. Which is one step further. They don't, you know, there's no way that even compassion fits. But there is the distinct, there's sort of wise compassion, and there's idiot compassion, isn't there? Or you know, it's a spectrum of compassion between them. And keeping safe, as we said in before the break, that has to be paramount, really, doesn't it? For oneself and those we care about. I mean, you know, we recognize tough love, don't we, sometimes, you know, in terms of parents of children and things like that, you know, that you don't always just give in everything they want, because that's not in the long term, that's not in their best interest. And I think there has to be, to my mind, I was thinking about it, I don't know what others think, that, you know, that there is also tough compassion. I have compassion for you. Mm-hmm. Yes, I recognize that there are causes and conditions that brought about your behavior, but I can't be anywhere near it, and neither, you know, do I want the people I care about to be near it. I guess by 20 maybe you have to make up your own mind, but it's hard then to be on the sidelines and watch, isn't it? I don't know.
I'd say that was a compassionate response, because you actually did give both people some thought. You know, you did connect, you did connect with the adult, the other adult involved, and you gave it some thought and you came to the decision. I mean, in a lot of, and I think that's compassionate in itself, just that process.
Yeah.
Might not have stayed in your head for very long, but, you know, but, I mean,
yeah.
Many, many people would not even get to that point. It's like, you know, don't ask me to do this. Boom, shut her down.
They're evil, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm. Just a thought.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Okay, so thank you for that, for sharing those thoughts in relation to that. Becky, we're going to do go into a meditation now, and then hopefully it'll begin to make sense. Sorry, it can't kind of catch up everything. That may be towards the end if you want. So this is kind of meditation. Yeah, looking at if we are trying to extend our compassion, and it seems like we are actually, to, you know, to beyond the usual kind of boundaries of people I like, people I care about. I mean, you've probably come across the traditional meditation, you know, but I can't remember if I've got it on there or not, but probably we'll do it tomorrow, where we begin, you know, meditation with compassion, or the alternative, loving kindness for ourselves, which isn't always easy, then to people we care about, then to people we don't know, and then to people we find difficult. Because the aim is, and apparently the possibility is, that we can extend it to everybody, even those who have caused great harm to ourselves, those we care about, to society at large. That we have to kind of take on trust, I think, and just take it step by step, a little at a time, and go as far as we are comfortable and are capable of going with this. That's, you know, there's no set thing that we are supposed to do, that you must do, that we take it gently, we take it step by step. So before we can even think of extending compassion or loving kindness to people who we find difficult, we need to, or the basis for this, according to the traditional approach, and it makes sense to me, is to recognize our common humanity. So that for the next, the rest of this session, we'll be doing that through a meditation and a video and probably a bit more conversation. But let's see how our time goes. Is that okay, yeah? So if you'd like to get yourselves again into a supportive posture. And sort of gradually narrow down your focus from the whole body awareness of the posture. Quickly, or as long as you like, actually taking your attention through the body, sort of section by section, paying particular attention to those areas where you know that you hold tension personally. And then settle on the sensations of the breath, using that as your anchor. So imagine someone you hold dear, someone you find it easy to care about and love. Could be a family member, such as a young child, an aging parent or a grandparent, or a close friend. For some, it could be a loving pet. Don't just think about the object of your affection in the abstract. See if you can feel, get some sense of their presence. Notice any pleasant feelings that arise within you as you picture this dear one. Now imagine being this person, step into their shoes, and see how easy it is for you to acknowledge that they have the same aspiration for genuine happiness that you do. It's easy to see, just like me, they wish for happiness and to avoid all suffering. Hold that thought with them for a while. Now bring to mind another person, someone you recognise but haven't had significant contact with, whom you have no special sense of closeness. Think of a real person you see quite often. A bit hard now. Perhaps someone you see or used to see at your workplace or in your class. Perhaps a bus driver or someone who works at your local cafe or library. Notice any feelings that may arise in you as you picture this person. And see how these feelings may be quite different from the ones you felt in relation to your loved one. Usually we don't concern ourselves with the thought of whether or not such a person is happy. Even when we happen to interact with this person, we don't give much thought to what might be their situation. We get what we came for and just move on. But now try to imagine being this person, stepping into their shoes. Imagine their life, their hopes and fears, which are every bit as real, multi-layered and diverse as your own. Recognize the profound similarity between yourself and this person at the fundamental human level, and reflect. Just like me, they wish to achieve happiness and avoid even the slightest suffering. Next, bring to mind a person with whom you may have some difficulty, someone who irritates or annoys you, who may have done you some harm, although perhaps start with small harms, or someone you think takes satisfaction in your misfortune. Imagine this person in front of you, which may bring up uncomfortable feelings. Simply acknowledge them without indulging or judging. These are the feelings that are there. You might recall painful interactions with them, how you felt then about uncomfortable feelings that arose in you. Don't suppress these feelings. But also don't reinforce them by trying too hard to accurately recall the exchanges. Then I said, and then they said. Just stay with the overall feelings. Now, if you're ready for an act of courage, put yourself in this person's shoes for a moment, recognizing that they're an object of deep concern to someone. They're a parent or a spouse, a child or a dear friend of someone. Acknowledge that this person has the same aspiration for happiness that you have. Try to remain in this awareness for a while, thinking, just like me, they wish for happiness and to avoid all suffering. Finally, imagine all three people together in front of you and reflect on the fact that they all equally share a basic yearning to be happy and free from suffering. On this level, there is no difference at all between these three people. In this fundamental respect, they are all exactly the same. See if you can relate to these people from that perspective, from this basis of the aspiration for happiness that we all share. This aspiration for happiness and wish to overcome suffering are a common bond that unites us with all other beings. Let your mind abide in this awareness for a while. With this deep recognition that the wish for happiness and the wish to overcome suffering are common to all, then silently repeat this phrase. Just like me, all others aspire to happiness and wish to overcome suffering. And then come back to an act of kindness to yourself. Focusing on the breath. And your own wish for genuine happiness. Which is as valid as anybody else's. And the wish to be free from all suffering, which is as valid as anybody else's. And when you're ready, gently end the meditation. Okay, so that was a challenge. Of course, you know, these meditations have been, well, people have been practicing these meditations for more than 2,500 years. So I'm guessing they're still around because they work, but, and there's some point to them, but they don't work straight away. It takes time. It takes practice, like learning an instrument, musical instrument, for example, or shooting penalties or something like that. It's the repetition. It's doing it over and over again. And breaking down our resistance to seeing this, what is actually, well, I don't know, somebody who may want to question that, but it seems to me a fact of life that everybody wants to, you know, that everyone's activities are motivated by the twin desires of being happy, gaining happiness, and avoiding problems or suffering. Almost certainly don't agree with, you know, the way that some people go about it, but that's, you know, that doesn't negate the actual motivation, I don't think. I don't know. And one, just continuing on, how long have we got? Okay, 15 minutes. Continuing on with our notion of what are the things that can get in the way of of extending our compassion to others. We looked at those problems that we might have, ideas that we might have that hold us back. And one of them that I'd like to look at now is how, when there are people that we don't know, and particularly people we don't like, we've taken a dislike to for whatever reason, valid or not, we tend to see them not as, what did he say in the meditation, multi-layered, diverse, and kind of real sort of genuine things. We tend to stereotype people, actually, don't we? We tend to kind of label them as, I don't know, you know, it's the basis of all, seems to me, you know, the major problems in society at large, really, is, you know, sort of basis of racism. Black people are like this, white people are like this, Asian people are like that, without recognizing the great multiplicity of among people, that women are like this, men are like that, you know, behind racism, sexism, homophobia, all of those injustice, all of those things that are, you know, that cause such pain and difficulty in the world, nationalism. You know, we're seeing the other person, we're seeing the others as other and somehow different and two-dimensional and not real generally. That's something we get into. And it's part of how we learn to perceive anything, but also it's the problem is, I think, that we tend to, but we can believe the stereotypes that we have. And so we tend to expect people to behave in a certain way, and actually that affects our perceptions. You know, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So our job, if we're on this path of extending our compassion and our connection with other people, is to see through those stereotypes, to recognize that people, all people, whether we like them or not, are multifaceted, are different. They have many different aspects of their personality. They have good days and bad days, just as we do, for example. So again, it's a constant process, I think, of chipping away at this shorthand that we have that creates stereotypes, particularly negative ones. So there's a really, I think, very, very clear and clever video clip, 3 minutes, that it's actually advertising Danish TV, I think, but it's really good. It's a good way of opening up this this question. So Faye, if you wouldn't mind showing us that. It's called What We Share, I think. All That We Share. Thank you.
It's easy to put people in boxes. There's us, and there's them. The high earners, and those just getting by. Those we trust, and those we try to avoid. There's the new Danes, and those who've always been here. The people from the countryside, and those who've never seen a cow. The religious, and the self-confident. There are those we share something with, and those we don't share anything with.
Velkommen. Jeg kommer til at stille jer nogle spørgsmål i dag. Nogle af dem kan godt være lidt personlige, men jeg håber, I vil svare ærligt på dem. Hvem herinde i rummet var klassens klovn? Hvem er bonusforældre?
And then suddenly, there's us. We who believe in life after death. We who've seen UFOs. And all of us who love to dance. We who've been bullied. and we who've bullied others. And then there's us, the lucky ones who've had sex this past week. We who are broken-hearted. We who are madly in love. We who feel lonely. We who are bisexual. And we who acknowledge the courage of others. We who have found the meaning of life. And we who have saved lives. And then there's all of us who just love Denmark. So maybe there's more that brings us together than we think. TV2 Denmark. All that we share. In boxes.
Thanks. Okay. I think it makes the point very well, very movingly. I don't know what you think about that, or so yeah, any comments that people want to make on anything that we've done till now, or questions, or that that film is also another one of the resources that I've put up on the list. There's this book that I chanced upon in a charity shop. You can't see the title because it's written white on white, but it's called Humans of New York. And it's the most beautiful thing, because it's this guy who went around New York just taking photographs of all sorts, you know, of people that he met along the way. All of them different, as you'd expect in a multicultural city like New York. And that's interesting enough. But then he obviously was a very engaging chap by the look, sounds of things, and he had conversations with them. And so there are snippets of the conversations. This is called Humans of New York, the stories. So by each photograph, there are snippets of conversations that he had. But I mean, that in itself is a really good meditation of looking through that, if you can persuade your library to buy it or something like that. Because, you know, there are people, and if I look at the photo to start with, then a certain, you know, stereotype sort of slots into place, all sorts of stereotypes. And then I read the words, and it may completely challenge the stereotype. It may not. Sometimes it does. Often it does, but sometimes not. And then I look back at the photo again, and already my perception of the photo has changed. It can be really very interesting to try and see people in different light, try and see more of people. That's what some of my best friends are actually really good conversationalists. They're really good at getting other people to open up, to share more of themselves, so that you see more of another person, the other person there. Thanks.
I've just sent a link. I've just sent a link because the video you just shared remind me of this song by U2, the band, the Irish band. And there is that video, if you watch it, it reminds me of the book you just mentioned from New York. So the song is called Love is Bigger Than Everything in Its Way.
Okay, that sounds nice. Thank you.
And if you found me watching it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
A thought who came to my mind, and if nobody else has seen it.
No, I haven't seen it, so I look forward to watching it. Thank you very much.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Yes, Anne.
It's quite hard to follow that film because it was so moving, but this is quite autumny after that. But the thing that I've always found difficult is being neutral about the neutral person. I'm not, I don't think. I find it very difficult to find a neutral person. Maybe I formed opinions on the way. I think I'm quite fluid in my opinions. I try to be quite open about it, but to get neutrality, I've struggled with that, actually.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Anne. And I think it's probably fairly common, actually. It's certainly my experience. You know, there isn't anybody that I haven't immediately formed some kind of judgment about, or not judgment, but have some kind of feeling of attraction to or repulsion from. You know, so just choose someone, you know. We're not going to get anybody, I don't think, who's entirely neutral. It's not likely. But okay, bye Tracy, thank you, bye bye. We're not going to get anybody who's entirely neutral, but just somebody you don't have any strong feelings about, really. That's the point. And I remember another one of the books on the list is by Sharon Salzberg, and she's done a lot of work on this as well in her Loving Kindness book. And she, I can't remember if it's in her book or in a talk that she gave, but she was saying how she did a long retreat on this, you know, friend, enemy, stranger thing, and was working with a particular stranger, the same one all the time. I think it was somebody who worked in her post office. And a bit later on, she was in conversation with a third person who mentioned this stranger from the post office, and Sharon said she found herself, oh yes, and they said, oh, do you know her? She said, well, no, not really, but she was my neutral person for 3 months, so so that feeling of closeness actually developed, although, you know, the person behind the counter was still the person behind the counter. It's ways of building up connection, isn't it? And you know, it seems to me that part of it is this noticing of being aware of another person. In the first place, you know, oftentimes, I don't know, maybe you don't do this, but, you know, I've certainly been in shops and I've bought something and I haven't even seen, I would know if it's a male or man or woman who served me, or young or old. I'd have a vague idea of who served me in the shop, but not, not very much, not a clear idea, really. And certainly not thinking of them as a person as such. So, you know, to even be, to walk around in that kind of state of openness rather than boxed in our own thoughts, let alone, you know, our stereotypes that we're projecting onto people, but even to be open up and not be boxed in with our own thoughts and our own agendas and whatever else that's going on is quite liberating and can open us up much, you know, really closely to, it can open us up to compassion and to connection.
Yes. My husband and I often laugh about this because I think I must have my antennae up the whole time. And if we're out together, I'll say, did you see that? Did you notice that? What do you think? And 9 times out of 10, he hasn't noticed anything about any other human being. How could you miss that? And I think it does speak volumes about the differences between him and I in terms of how we go about our relationships with people as well, you know. You know, both good and not so good.
Because, yeah.
You know, if you do connect, then there's consequences of connecting, isn't there? Both good and not so good. And if you don't connect, there's consequences, both good and not so good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
probably a good balance then.
Yes, I think so. But I guess everyone's like that, aren't they? Yes, I think
it's
the antennae is up to you all the time.
Yeah, and certainly, I don't know. Also, I don't know if for you, but for me, it varies. So if I'm busy, or if I'm stressed, or if I'm distracted, then you know I can tread on people perhaps and not even notice, you know. But generally speaking, yeah, in a more relaxed phase, it's I can be open. Yeah, and there are consequences. True. Okay, so that, according to the timetable, is the end of our time for today. So thank you very much again for joining in and for everything that you've done and taken part in. I would suggest if you want to do any meditations this afternoon, they're up there. But if you want to just get out and enjoy the sunshine, if you're able to do that, then why not do that? And then tomorrow, say, we'll come back, we'll convene again at 9 and go through the same process, but we'll be focusing on compassion for ourselves in particular. Okay, any thoughts or no? And Mackie, if you wanted to just stay for 5 minutes or so, I'll kind of quickly run through what we've been, if that's okay. Okay,